Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
New activation and upfront payment for 3-month plan required. Taxes and fees extra. Additional restrictions apply. See mintmobile.com for full terms.
Hi, my name is Evie. I am from Nigeria.
私の名前はケンヤ大沢です。
I'm Monica from Poland.
This is the Happy Pod.
Welcome to the Happy Pod.
Welcome to this week's Happy Pod.
This is indeed the Happy Pod from the BBC World Service. I'm Jackie Leonard, and in this edition, uploaded on Saturday the 5th of August, the climbers who've completed the fastest ascent of the world's 14 highest mountains in record time. We got the harpist who played a concert at the top of Mount Kilimanjaro.
The sun came out. The music was just so crisp and clear because the air was just so beautiful.
We'll be celebrating another musician, Felix Klieser, born without arms but able to wow concert audiences by playing the French horn with his feet.
When you make music for people, to make people happy. When I have the feeling that the audience is happy and enjoys the concert, then I'm happy too.
Also in this podcast, the Nigerian prodigy, seeking to inspire others to take up chess.
Chess helps you to have alternative plans, to see the big picture, to control your emotions. You have to think. It is not just a game.
The record to scale the world's 14 highest mountains has been broken. Norwegian Kristin Harala and Nepali Tenzin Lama Sherpa completed their feat in 92 days. That's 3 months and 5 days faster than the previous record. The pair's final summit was K2 in Pakistan, the world's second highest mountain, and all 14 peaks were above 8,000 metres. Kristin told us about their extraordinary achievement.
It was very, very special and we were very happy. We had a very tough and hard climb up to the summit of K2. But most of all, on the summit, we knew that we were halfway. We still had to climb down. So we were happy, but we were focused on getting safely back down also.
So these 14 summits in record time, how did you manage it? I know that there was a bit of controversy over the use of some very modern equipment and that sort of help, but talk us through how you managed it.
I think a lot of the information that came out about helicopter were wrong information. It sounded like we have been flying helicopter up, but of course we haven't. We have been climbing the whole way from base camp to the summit and back. And of course, it's a hard job when we're out there. Sometimes we arrive base camp and maybe we rest a couple of hours and then we start to climb. And sometimes we climb up to camp 1 or camp 2 and it can take us 5 to 10 hours. And then we rest a couple of hours and then we continue to the next camp. And then we go for the summit push and maybe that takes 28 hours or something. I think the longest we have done has been more than 40 hours. So it's not much rest. And of course, you get very, very tired.
I'm feeling exhausted just listening to that. You didn't just break the record. You absolutely smashed it. Were you confident throughout that that was the way it was going to go? Were you prepared to sort of allow yourself some more rest when you needed it?
As we climbed during the spring in first Tibet and then Nepal, we kind of saw there was a chance that we could complete all the 9 that we have in Tibet and Nepal in the spring. Then we managed to do that, but we knew that we still had the 5 mountains in Pakistan left, and we know some of them are very challenging.
What is next for you? How do you cap this? What do you do next?
I'm going to be home and get children and get married.
Do you have someone in mind for that?
Yeah, I do. It's been very, very hard to be away from my boyfriend and my family also. So now I'm very glad that I can spend some more time with them. I came back on Monday. We had a celebration here in Oslo. And today we are actually going back to Nepal to have a celebration together with Lama and the team there.
Obviously, you have an incredible working relationship with Tenzin Lama Sherpa. Are you friends as well? Do you really get on? Do you have to get on if you're doing something like this?
Yeah, we have to. And the nice and the funny thing, and it just says so much about a human being, but when I met him in March, he didn't speak a word English and I a couple of words Nepali, but we understood each other perfectly. And since then, we have been together and spent so much time together and really good friends. And he's just amazing and not just the strongest Sherpa that I have ever seen, but he's also the kindest and taking so much care of me. And we have had so much fun, nice time, and also, of course, hard time together.
Norwegian climber Kristin Harala, and congratulations to her and Tenzin Lama Sherpa. Plastic is obviously really useful stuff, but hundreds of millions of tons of it are produced every year. And that's bad news for the environment because it can take years for it to break down. That's where scientist Eleftheria Rumeli and her colleagues come in. They have come up with a new plastic using powdered blue-green cyanobacteria cells known as spirulina that can be used to make hard shapes, but which in the right conditions will decompose like fruit.
We actually use food material to make it. So the type of biomass that we use, because it is made of proteins, carbohydrates, fats, and that's why we actually have it as a food supplement. You can eat it.
Wait, so you can eat your plastic?
Yeah. Yes. However, we have done transformation, heat-induced transformation. We have toasted it. It does smell like burnt fish or something. We have other plastics that we develop from fruits, like from strawberry or banana. These smell much nicer. So when we do these in the lab, you can come and it's more pleasant.
So what can you actually make with this stuff?
You can imagine it for single-use plastics that are in contact with your food, for example, your cutlery, your plates. However, I think that these are not the best uses. This material does have significant structural properties, so it can carry a lot of load before it breaks. So you can actually build like your closet, and it can carry the load of your books and your clothes, your desk, your chair. I think those applications are a little better use because they utilize the strength of the material. However, this is not a product. We have not made a product.
So it's a step on the way, but it's not actually a product as such just yet. And it is interesting, as you were saying, that other scientists and entrepreneurs are working towards creating fully biodegradable plastic right now. Let's hear from Chan Lau. He's the co-founder of an Australian company called Cassava Bags.
So our magic ingredient is the cassava plant, and more specifically, we utilize the starches. So there's no microplastics when it breaks down, and there's no toxins as well. It can dissolve in hot water in under 60 seconds, and it'll compost in 6 to 8 months.
So how important do you think it is that lots of different minds, different scientists, different researchers and entrepreneurs are all coming at this problem from different directions?
It is very important that we find solutions that are approaching the problem from multiple ways. So people are trying, I guess, from different points of view to give solutions to this problem. So for us, what we have in our generation, I guess, is a thing called interdisciplinarity, because we need all of these different expertise to be pulled together. I don't think that this specific material is going to change the world, but I do think that our students and the people that we reach and the way that we teach them how to think about designing materials, I think this is going to have a higher potential and a higher impact. And for me, that's the most important thing. It's not that my team now at this one particular year made this contribution. I don't think anybody's going to remember that. And I don't care for that. I do care that all of these people then afterwards, they're going to make changes. And little by little, that's how you get to results, I think.
Eleftheria Rumeli of the University of Washington in Seattle. That is French horn player Felix Klieser playing with the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra. A glorious sound by any measure. But all the more impressive when you realise that Felix was born without arms, and so instead of fingers, he's playing with his toes. The 32-year-old German has just made his debut at one of the biggest events for any classical musician, the BBC Proms, at the Royal Albert Hall in London. And he spoke to us from there.
When you make music for people, to make people happy. And this is the most important thing for me. And when I have the feeling that the audience is happy and enjoys the concert, then I'm happy too. And for this, it doesn't matter where you play, in which city, in which country. The most important things are that people are having a beautiful time.
So your horn, you play it with your feet, don't you? So do you have to have an instrument that is particularly adapted for you? How do you get around the physical issues of playing an instrument like this?
No, it's a normal horn. So everyone who can play the horn can play my instrument. So no, in the end, it's not an adapted instrument. It's not, in the end, you know, the fingering, the things fingers are doing is not that important with a French horn. It's not like a piano, like a violin. When you play piano or violin, then the fingering is very, very important. But with a French horn, the most important thing is the mouth and your lips, your air, how you breathe and so on. This is the most important thing. So, and of course, this was also, when I learned the French horn, this was the most challenging thing.
So you started playing when you were a very small boy, didn't you? Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, yes, I started to play the French horn when I was 4 years old. And my family and around, there's no one making music. There's no musician. And of course, there's no one playing the French horn. And I was never in a concert where I've seen the instrument and said, well, this looks so beautiful. I want to learn this instrument. So where I got a contact with this instrument and from where I got the idea, this is a really big miracle.
It is. And I mean, you had some quite serious difficulties to overcome in order to become a musician, in order specifically to become a horn player. Talk us through that.
At the beginning, I have to tell you, learning an instrument and becoming a musician is very difficult. It doesn't matter who you are, what you are, how talented you are. It's something of the most difficult. So it's like becoming a professional football player, because when you grew up and when you want to learn an instrument, then it can be really frustrating because you have many, many problems in your life. You have many situations where you have the feeling, okay, there's a limit and you cannot overcome or jump over this limit. And then you have to decide, okay, should I go on with the situation? Should I go on with the instrument, or should I stop here and accept this limit? And this is something which is very difficult, but in the end, it's something that's very difficult for everyone.
Do you think that the audiences for classical music are becoming more diverse? Would you like to see a change in the way that people approach classical music?
The most important thing is where you play. When you travel to Asia, when you play in Asia, the audience is very young. So I would say my age is the old age. So they are about 20, something between 20 and 30, you can find in a concert when you play in Asia. When you play in Europe or specific in Germany, then the audience is much older. So it depends on where you play.
And what does music do for you? What does it give you?
I think it's a good or it's the best way how with which you can communicate emotions and way of thinking. The way that you have the chance to learn new pieces. This is something which makes music interesting. So in the end, I cannot say this is my favorite piece or this is my favorite composer, because I would say in the end, to be able to play as many things as possible, this is the most beautiful thing in making music.
Felix Klieser, and you can hear his prom and most of the BBC prom season on BBC Sounds. Now, time for a listener.
Hey, happy team. I wanted to share with you my happy sound that accompanies me for 3.5 years now. When my daughter Inka was 2 years old, she played around with a video recording app on my mobile. She walked around the house being beautifully cheerful. And this is what she recorded. This sound accompanies me every single day. I saved it as MP3. Now every phone call I receive is my happy 2-year-old babbling to me. No phone call I receive has ever been a bad one since the tune changed.
Still to come.
I am proud of my daughter. As a father, I have learned that it is not just about winning trophies or accolades.
We will hear about a remarkable young chess prodigy in Nigeria. Earlier, we heard about climbing mountains, and we've heard about a very impressive musician. Now let's combine those things and meet Irish harpist Siobhan Brady. She is just back in Ireland after hiking to the summit of Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania and then playing a 20-minute concert. No mean feat when you consider the summit is 5,895 metres up. She is hoping to beat her own Guinness World Record for the highest altitude harp performance. She told us about her ascent.
We started climbing at midnight in the complete darkness. All our water froze. We had head torches on. We were kept awake solely by our guides and porters singing to us. And dawn broke at 6 a.m. and we got to the summit at 8. We had the most beautiful weather. So I had like a down jacket and down mittens and hand warmers. And I didn't end up needing them because the sun came out. And it was surprisingly warm, still very cold. The music was just so crisp and clear. The air was just so beautiful.
And how did you choose the music to perform?
So I got in contact with a few composers around Ireland. So a few of them were written by my teacher, Janet Harbison, who ran the school in Limerick. She's actually a Grammy Award winning composer. So I played a piece called by Strangford Water.
You talk about the magic of the performance and the magic of the moment, but getting there must have been a real test of resilience. And you've talked about the harp as being more portable, but who carried it? And at any point did you think, I wish I'd learnt the piccolo?
Well, it is the symbol of Ireland. Like, it was just the most beautiful image. It wouldn't have been anyway as more beautiful if it was any other instrument, I think. We were going to carry it. And so we had 2 years of practicing. We went once a month to various mountains around Ireland and abroad. And we did different methods of carrying the harp. So we used like a flight box with poles, or then we tried to turn it into a backpack. We were told by our guides when we got there that if we attempted to carry it, over half the team wouldn't make it to the summit. So we decided to give the knowledge that we had created to the African team over there. We had 6 or 8 porters and guides who went up a very fast route with the harp. So it only took 2 days to get up. So we took 5 days because we had to acclimatize to the altitude.
What sort of reaction have you had?
It's actually just been shocking. I wasn't expecting anything at all. When we got off of the plane, the director of the airport of Kilimanjaro had a dance troupe waiting for us on the runway.
Do you have a message for the people from Tanzania who helped you make this incredible ascent and perform the way that you did?
Just a message of thanks. The phrase I got given was Tanzania unforgettable, and it honestly does sum it up.
Harpist Siobhan Brady, who's definitely heard the piccolo joke before. Now, a few of the other things that caught our attention this week. You might have seen the tale of luck and unity from India, where 11 women have hit the jackpot. The women, all garbage collectors from the southern state of Kerala, couldn't afford individual lottery tickets, so they pooled their money to buy just one. Now they are sharing the jackpot of 100 million rupees. That's around $1.2 million. Congratulations to them. And let's hear from farmer Lee Wilson from Kansas in the US, who has seriously raised the bar on anniversary presents.
We're celebrating our 50th wedding anniversary, August 10th, and, you know, what's a guy get his gal on their 50th? And I put a lot of thought into it, and she always liked sunflowers, and I thought this is the year to plant sunflowers. So we planted her 80 acres of sunflowers.
That's a massive field of 1.2 million sunflowers as a surprise gift for his wife, Renee, to celebrate their golden wedding anniversary. And yes, I will get a picture of that on various social media using the hashtag #TheHappyPod because it's lovely. To Nigeria now to hear from Ivie Urieto, a brilliant chess player who believes the game can be a positive force for social change. She's 8. She's already won numerous medals and intends to be a grandmaster by the time she turns 15.
My dad inspired me to start playing chess at the age of 4. I realized that I was really good at chess when I started beating my dad and going for tournaments. I want to be a professional chess player, and I also want to inspire young children and adults.
Because it's not just about your own ambitions and your own capabilities. You're actually an ambassador for the Gift of Chess Foundation, yes, aren't you? What does that mean?
I go to schools, orphanage and local communities to distribute the gift of chess. And I also teach them how to play chess. It is not just a game.
So what do you hope other people can take from chess, what they can learn from this game?
Chess helps you to have alternative plans. It helps you to see the big picture, to control your emotions. So you have to think.
We asked your dad what he made of all your success, and I hope you can hear this little clip that he gave us.
I am proud of my daughter for her victories on the chessboard and the person she has become through the journey of chess. She remains humble, kind, grounded, always willing to help and support others. As a father, I have learned that it is not just about winning trophies or accolades. It's about nurturing a child's passion and watching them shine uniquely.
So what do your friends and other families say about what you're doing with chess?
They say chess is a good game, that I should keep on playing and I should never give up.
Chess grandmaster in the making, Ivie Urieto in Nigeria. How do you feel about watermelon? I'm betting you aren't as excited about it as the good people of Takizawa City in Japan. Thousands of people are descending on the city this month for the Watermelon Festival, and spokesman Kenya Osawa, with help from interpreter Catherine Nozawa, explained why.
So in order to increase the awareness of Takizawa watermelons, we created the festival, and every year we continue to draw in more visitors. It has gotten so popular that now we have about 4,000 people visit and sell about 3,000 watermelons.
Now, the reason we became aware of your festival, we especially liked a photograph that we saw in the press of the mayor, Satoru Takeda, wearing a very smart suit with a very serious expression on his face, but wearing a big foam melon hat. Okay. Is it fun, your festival?
At the festival, there are some events for people to enjoy. You can hear some music related to watermelons. And also there's a watermelon splitting contest for children.
Can you just explain that for us?
So first you put on a blindfold, and then the watermelon is maybe about 5 meters away, and you have to walk up to it and hit it with a stick and try and break open the watermelon. But this year at the festival, they won't be using a real watermelon, but a beach ball instead, as part of like a environmental policy to not to waste any of the delicious watermelons.
Very wise, very wise. So it sounds like, at least initially, the festival has been for farmers and people who want to buy watermelon. But you're talking to the world now. Is this something you would like tourists to come and share in?
We want everyone to be able to come and enjoy the watermelon in our city.
Our thanks to Kenya Osawa and interpreter Catherine Nozawa. And it all kicks off on August the 11th in Takizawa City, if you are in the neighbourhood. And if you know about an unusual festival, please get in touch. Maybe invite us. Now, we don't do a great deal of sport here, but it does make a lot of people very happy. As we record this edition, the Women's Football World Cup is now into the group stages, making dreams come true for some. And we can't let English cricketer Stuart Broad retire without a mention. Some of the newspaper headlines tell the story. Fairy tale finish, way to go, Stuart. And that's how you say goodbye. He ended in style, bowling England to another dramatic victory in the fifth test against Australia to leave the Ashes series level at 2-2. Another cricketing great, Sachin Tendulkar, tweeted, "A phenomenal career draws to a close." Let's hear Stuart Broad's reaction to his last moments.
It's always a really difficult decision to walk away from a game you love, but ultimately I wanted my last ball and my last bat to be playing in an environment that's so special, because my lasting memories will be just of pure joy and pure happiness, and that's exactly how I feel right now.
Stefan Schemmelt, BBC chief cricket writer, was watching.
I think the funny thing about that moment was the anticipation that everyone had around it and the shared experience that everyone knew what was possible. But I guess the happiness in the moment from an England point of view was this perfect storm of England trying to draw the series and the knowledge that this great warrior, Stuart Broad, was bowing out to win the Test match for England, to bring this amazing series to a really dramatic and fitting finale. The stars really aligned for what was a really joyous moment.
Looking more generally at sport, we experience, don't we, that the emotional heights and depths when we're watching it or participating in it. What is it about sport?
It's a really unique thing, isn't it, in terms of a collective experience, in that we all buy into the possibility of sharing together our joy or our despair or our anger or our disappointment. And that is kind of the deal that you sign up to when you go to watch a sporting event. And I suppose the only thing I could compare it to is if you're watching a stand-up comedian on the TV at home, you might laugh out loud a couple of times. But if you're in the auditorium or you're in the theatre, you're much more likely to laugh out loud because everyone with you is laughing too. And I think that's the thing with sport, isn't it? That when we're all together, our emotions become heightened and the lows are lower and the highs are higher. And you should never underestimate what the crowd does to a sporting event. And when you have a moment of that pure joy, like we had with Stuart Broad on Monday, well, it's perfect, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Stefan Schemmelt, BBC chief cricket writer. And that's it from us for now. Remember, if you'd like to be part of the Happy Pod, you can email us the sound that brings you joy. We would also love to hear if you have any stories to share that will make us all smile. As ever, the address globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. This edition was mixed by Chesney Fawkes-Porter, and the producers were Anna Murphy and Tracy Gordon. Our editor is Karen Martin. I'm Jackie Leonard, and until next time, a bit more of this. Goodbye.
If you're listening to this podcast, you must recognize the value of asking questions. At Aramco, our questions help us engineer a better future. How can today's resources fuel our shared tomorrow? How can we deliver energy to a world that can't stop? How can we deliver one of the fuels of the future? How can we sow curiosity to harvest ingenuity? To learn more about how innovation drives us forward, visit aramco.com/poweredbyhow.
At Bombas, we make socks, underwear, and T-shirts that feel good and do good. They feel good because they're designed with the softest materials and comfort innovations. They do good because for every item you purchase, we donate another item to someone who needs it. So far, we at Bombas have donated over 100 million items, and your purchases add to that impact. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST at checkout.
I was trying to understand why my friend from school time and other friends from our city were becoming jihadis. She was in Syria.
6 months pregnant, you traveled to Syria in order to make a film about this friend of yours.
Just a personal documentary about her radicalization.
This is Lives Less Ordinary. Remarkable personal stories from across the globe.
She was part of a group which was connected to Al-Qaeda. I was not feeling insecure because I had a security guarantee from my friend and the group she was associated with.
Lives Less Ordinary from the BBC World Service.
I was not sure at the beginning if they were kidnapping me for political reasons, if they were kidnapping me for money. The whole situation was for me totally unclear.
Search for Lives Less Ordinary wherever you get your podcasts.